the day's biggest stories, the people behind the headlines, the conversations you won't hear anywhere else. I'm Christy Strasser. You're listening to Odyssey's On Deadline. Talk about a firestorm before the midterms? While President Donald Trump continues to beat the drum about what he claims was election interference in 2020, about 6,600 people in New Jersey who said they were not U.S. citizens had been incorrectly registered to vote. The issue was a technical error during the previous gubernatorial administration, Governor Mickey Sherrill said. She added that fewer than 400 were found to have actually voted and that the state is taking action to remove them from its voter rolls. Here's more from KYW in Philly.
This failure didn't occur under my watch, but accountability starts now.
Governor Mickey Sherrill says she's appalled by the reckless failure here. She called out the previous administration for not bringing it to light when it was first discovered in 2024 that undocumented immigrants were registered to vote, even though they checked the box on their forms at motor vehicle that said they are ineligible to vote.
I learned of this last Wednesday, and I immediately ordered my chief counsel to launch a comprehensive investigation. Currently, the Division of Elections is working to ensure anyone who is illegally registered is removed from the voter rolls.
Sherrill says there were 6,600 illegal registrations in total, and fewer than 400 of them actually voted.
We're sending letters to the people impacted by this error.
She says the state is searching for a new vendor and taking steps to ensure this never happens again.
Here's more on another disaster, the parasite that's still causing sickness across the U.S.
There's still no definitive confirmation as to the source of the stomach parasite outbreak that's led to thousands of people getting sick. The FDA thinks iceberg lettuce is to blame. Either way, local produce vendors say it hasn't stopped customers from buying fresh fruits and vegetables. KYW's Connor Barcon has more from Reading Terminal Market.
Customers shopped for typical ingredients like lettuces, peppers, and herbs at Iovine Brothers Produce. Eliminating fresh vegetables would leave people with too many unhealthy options.
What do you turn to then, M&Ms? Yeah, I mean.
Butch Doherty is director of operations at Iovine Brothers Produce and says some customers, but not all, are apprehensive about continuing to eat fresh vegetables without a clear source of the current outbreak.
There's some people that are concerned. They might be avoiding lettuce just out of their own comfort level, but we have other people that are still buying lettuces and spring mixes.
The cyclospora parasite is known to cause severe gastrointestinal issues. The CDC recommends washing your hands before decontaminating fresh produce. Cold water rinsing helps reduce risk, but it does not guarantee to kill the parasite. Cooking vegetables to 165 degrees Fahrenheit is the best way to kill cyclospora and most foodborne illnesses.
In other top headlines this week, New York's Democratic Socialist mayor said he would like to arrest Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu. Here's 1010 Wins.
Well, it's not that Mayor Mamdani doesn't want to arrest Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu if he comes to the city. It's that he can't. The mayor posting a video to X saying this about the International Criminal Court's arrest warrant that accuses Netanyahu of war crimes.
My administration has reviewed every avenue available under applicable law to determine whether New York City could execute the International Criminal Court's arrest warrant if Benjamin Netanyahu came here. It is clear that we do not have the independent legal authority to enforce this warrant. The federal government, however, does.
President Trump maintaining, though, that Netanyahu will not be arrested in any way, shape, or form. The prime minister, who's denied all allegations of war crimes, is expected to be in New York when the UN reconvenes in September. One of the army soldiers believed to have been killed in an attack on an American base in Jordan is from Queens.
28-year-old Army Sergeant Angel Rampersad from Ozone Park had been listed as missing, but the Pentagon now says she is believed to have been one of three service members killed in the attack last Friday. The Pentagon says Rampersad was an active-duty soldier supporting overseas operations in Jordan. The attack is under investigation. Mayor Mamdani says Rampersad's sacrifice will be remembered not just in Queens, but across all five boroughs, and he says the sacrifices service members and their families make is a reminder that wars overseas are never distant.
Many are afraid that what's unfolding overseas in Iran is a forever war. But what happens when you work at a forever job that you hate? Here's KYW in Philly.
All right, so you don't like your job. You do like your health insurance. So you stay put. Nearly a quarter of us are in that situation now, according to a new poll from Gallup and West Health. It's up 8 percentage points over the last 5 years, rising right alongside the cost of healthcare. Staying in an unwanted gig for insurance, what's known as job lock, is more prevalent among women, people with chronic conditions, and those earning less than $90,000 a year. The poll calls it a powerful constraint on worker mobility, productivity, entrepreneurship, and wage growth.
Why are so many staying in situations that aren't in their best interest? Here's Dave Cohen on WWL in New Orleans.
So I wanted to get Judy Ho to come on and talk about that with us. She's a clinical and forensic neuropsychologist and host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Morning, Judy.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I am well because I feel like I have the ability and power to influence the direction of my life. That if I don't like the way things are going in my marriage, in my job, in my finances, in the place where I live, that I can do something about that. But I was really stunned by how many people texted me saying things like, I have been in a job I hate for 20 years, but the money's too good to leave and my family needs the support. And other people telling me things like, cheaper to keep her. And that's why they're not leaving a relationship they feel stuck in. And just one person after another telling me they are unhappy with the way their life is going, but don't feel they can fix it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. One of the first things that I actually learned about when I was in my doctoral program years ago was this idea of locus of control. In fact, I actually did a research study on it. So locus of control is just a very fancy word to describe what you're saying. This idea of, you know, where is the belief of control in your life? So is the belief of control resting with you? Is the belief of control resting with, let's say, a powerful other that is not another human being, for example, a greater entity of some sort, God, or, you know, what anybody wants to call that if they have spiritual beliefs? Or is it that it's just happenstance, that it's just random, or that they really have very little control of anything that's going on in their lives? And so there's kind of these three ideas of where you think primary control rests in your life. So if you believe that control rests with you, or even that control, at least in part, rests in this powerful entity you believe in, if you have spiritual beliefs, generally people fare better in terms of their mental and physical health. But if you believe that, you know, bad things just happen, you can't really control them, it's not really up to you to change, if that's the way you feel, that third idea of locus control, that's just like kind of random or happenstance, or you don't know who's controlling it, or it changes, people tend to struggle a lot. And I think that goes back to our biology as human beings, because part of what makes us thrive and survive is at least a belief, even if it might be, you know, not correct sometimes, because of course there's only so much we can control, but the idea that you think you have control over your life is huge for our survival as a species. You have to feel like you have some things that you can do to change your circumstances when they're not as good as you were hoping. This is really important just in terms of our biology and how we were built. So I'm not surprised by this topic, but I am surprised at how much feedback you got that so many people are struggling with this and don't think they have a way out.
Yeah, and a lot of it was financial. A lot of people said that they just didn't think they could find a job that they would enjoy. And so they stayed in a job that they don't like or even hate because it pays the bills, or because they don't feel like they can find a better opportunity. Or several people said that the money really was good at their job. Even though they hated it, they kept it because it paid well. And, you know, we all know the old adage, and probably all of our parents or grandparents or somebody at some point told us, find a job you love and you'll never work a day in your life. But I don't know that many people are finding those jobs that they love.
Yeah, you know, I think there's obviously a balance, right, as well. So, of course, it would be great to have a job that you enjoy. But also a job is called a job for a reason. So I think that there's got to be some kind of balance of, I enjoy my job, but I understand that there might be some unpleasant things that come with it from time to time. And also it's still work, versus sometimes I think that there's also this perception that you're supposed to love your job all the time. And interestingly, if you have that kind of belief, then any kind of minor disappointment you have with your job it makes you feel a lot worse than if you were expecting some of that to be mixed in the first place. So I think it's a double-edged sword in a way. It's like, you know, you definitely don't want to be in a job where you just can't stand going to work every day. But also, and I see this a little bit more with our younger generation.
Judy, for someone who just feels like they can't get out of a rut, feels like they can't get a better job, or isn't willing to, or doesn't think that it's worth the risk to try and find a new job, doesn't feel like they can do better, what advice would you have for them?
Well, I would say that it doesn't have to be a huge monumental change right away. I think that sometimes people shy away from change because they are kind of seeing like 10 or 20 steps ahead. Like, wow, that's a lot of work. I think that it's really helpful just to take that one tiny first step, you know? So if you're not happy with your job, just get online and look at what's there at one of the many, you know, job platforms that are out there. Just look. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to apply. You don't even have to open too many listings, but just take a look, right, at what's around in your area. Have a conversation with a trusted person, a family member or a friend about your intentions. Hey, I'm thinking about leaving my job. Just kind of wanted to chat with somebody about it, right? It doesn't have to be a huge step, but if you take one step at a time, it can really help to relieve that fear of change, which of course a lot of people have, and it's understandable.
Yeah, I've been blessed. I've worked here now nearly 30 years. And been blessed that I, even though I have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, which I don't love, I do, once I get to work, almost always enjoy my day at work. And I enjoy what I do. And it was what I always wanted to do. So I am blessed in that. But as a young person, I had some jobs I didn't like and I did leave them. And I did try to find a better circumstance. But I was just surprised by how many people just do not feel like they can seek better employment, whether it's about more money or a better place to work or something that they enjoy more. Just so many people seem so unhappy with their jobs.
Yes. And I think that feeling can be growing too, especially in the age of social media, because you look at other people's feeds and you think that their lives are so much better than yours. But I always want to remind people, you're looking at a highlight reel. You're not looking at the moment when they had an argument with their spouse or when they spilled coffee on their new white shirt. Like, they're not posting about that. So I think that some of that does contribute to the pressure and makes you feel unsatisfied with your life when you look at everybody else seemingly living their best life. But, you know, we're all struggling to some degree. Everybody has struggles, no matter what, even during happy times. And so I think that that's one element of it. And then I think the other element is just people have been a little bit more pessimistic, and I feel like this started at the height of COVID, where it's just like there's a lot of negativity in the air. I feel like a lot of conversations are like, well, what's the point? And I feel like as a society, we've gone a little bit more pessimistic, so it might be important to try to bring that balance again. It's not about everything in your life is rainbows and sunshine and flowers, but it's, you know, maybe there's a middle ground here, and maybe there is something better if you just take a chance and you make a little effort towards change.
When it comes to how people end up in places and positions they hate, think about this. New rules that could force college grads to pick pay over passion. Here's KCBS in the Bay Area.
A new federal law aims to hold colleges accountable to make sure their graduates get a return on their investments in the form of a well-paying job after they graduate. But as KCBS's Megan Goldsby tells us, it's complicated.
The law, part of the Big Beautiful Bill, will cut off federal financial aid from colleges that can't prove most of their graduates make at least the median wage of someone in the state who has only a high school diploma.
I think any student would expect that. That equates to about $18 an hour.
And the vast majority of California schools and programs already meet that threshold right now, says Michael Itzkowitz, founder and president of the HEA Group, which specializes in research on college access and value. The ones that don't, though, are centered in the arts and certificate services like cosmetology.
So this really leaves a big question mark in terms of how those programs should be funded.
Without federal grants and loans, most students wouldn't be able to attend college.
About 70% of students across the nation receive some sort of federal aid.
Schools have a few more years to try to meet the standards before that money is cut.
If all this talk about being stuck has you yearning for the freedom of open water, you're not alone. Turns out there's a cheaper alternative to boat ownership. Here's WWJ in Detroit.
What is Freedom Boat Club?
So Freedom Boat Club is a membership-based boating plan where you can join the club and get hassle-free access to brand new boats around the country, around the state, and around the world. We take care of maintenance, cleaning, storage. We cover the insurance. You just join by paying an entry fee and monthly dues, and you get unlimited access to brand new boats, as well as unlimited free training with U.S. Coast Guard licensed captains.
So you kind of get to enjoy a boat without all of the maintenance and registration and all of the fun things that go along with having a boat that people don't necessarily want to deal with.
You got it. Yeah. Hassle-free boating.
And let's say somebody joins here in Metro Detroit, and then they go on vacation to Florida, and one of those days they want to take a boat out. Are they able to do that, or is it strictly for whatever area you join?
No, so you actually would have access. We're at over 450 locations now, and you'd have access at any of them as a member here. You can use it there in Florida as well. You know, that's a huge perk down in the winter months. You know, a lot of us Michiganders love to travel south, chase the warmer weather, so to speak. And you get to go down there and enjoy boating without towing a boat down there or owning a boat down there. All the hassles are covered.
So let's say somebody signs up. How does it work to request one of the boats? Can you just show up? Do you need to call ahead? Just kind of a general idea of how this works.
We have an app that you can install on any of your devices, iPads, iPhones, phones, whatever it is. We also have a state-of-the-art reservation system online. You know, you can use on your computer, or you can just call the docks day of or show up and take whatever's available.
Sounds pretty straightforward. What are the rules as far as signing up? Are there certain age requirements, certain things that you need to do to make sure that you are following the rules when heading out on a boat?
Yeah, so we require all members to be a minimum of 21 years of age. You have to get your NASBLA Boater Safety Certificate. It's something you can obtain online at your own pace. Not something you have to do physically in person. And then you go through a new member orientation with a captain, you know, one of those U.S. Coast Guard licensed captains that I spoke of earlier. That's about 3 hours on average where you kind of prove yourself and demonstrate the skills that you have or maybe the skills that you lack. From there, you can pass or fail. If you pass, based on the discretion of the captain, you go through a checklist and everything you covered, and then you're good to start making reservations if you've met all three of those requirements. If you don't pass, you simply schedule it again and keep taking it, keep learning, and keep training for free until you do pass and you're ready to get boating.
I mean, it seems fairly straightforward, making sure that you know kind of the basics at the very least before you're boating around other people.
For sure. You know, there's a lot of different people who fall into the category of what I would call a good candidate for being a Freedom Boat Club member. But if you're somebody who maybe is a business owner and you don't have a ton of time and you want to enjoy the water, this is a great option because we do all the cleaning. We do all the maintenance. We handle the repairs. You just show up and go boating. Maybe you've got young kids and you want to go boating, but just little ones while you're uncovering and fueling up the boat and getting it cleaned and prepared, maybe that's too much. Or if you're somebody who's older and you simply can't handle the stress that it takes to actually maintain and keep your boat in working order, then the boat club's a great option. We cover the hassles, and that can be a benefit for a lot of different categories of people. Besides that, you know, I kind of mentioned early on that all of our boats are brand new. As a member, we're constantly growing, adding new locations. Brand new boats are being implemented in the fleet year over year. So your membership is appreciating constantly. You know, if you were to buy a boat, you're going to take a hit as soon as you pull it off the lot. Whereas with this, it's one investment of an entry fee, and then you just pay monthly dues, and we're constantly growing and improving the experience, as well as, you know, you get that unlimited access to free training, becoming comfortable, safe, confident while you're out there on the water. And you're just going to be able to make memories, you know, year over year over year, without all the headaches that go along with it typically.
This sounds like a nice way to kind of test the waters and see, like, am I a boat person?
Like you mentioned, if you were getting into boating, A, the training is a huge benefit, but B, we're not limiting you to just one style of boat. We've got a variety. So bow riders, tritunes, center tonsils, all different styles from different makes, models, and manufacturers. So that maybe if you do want to get into boating, but you don't want to make that big capital investment up front, you join the club, you use the training, you experience different styles of boats. All in all, you do it for a couple of years, maybe you make a decision on what kind of boat you want to buy and you segue into that.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.